Good morning. Today's Daf in the Dharma is Mem Gimel. We're starting this morning on the bottom of Mem Beis. We're going to be starting with the Mishnah. Hamudar Hana Mecha Veiro. Mishnah over here is going to continue now describing the relationship between Madar and Mudar. Somebody makes a neder and therefore forbids somebody from getting benefit from him. The one making the neder is the Madar. The one who is not allowed to get benefit is the Mudar. And we already discussed earlier, somewhere along this parak, Machlokus Rishonim, exactly who's going to get the Isser when the violation of the Neder is going to be done. The Rambam takes a really interesting viewpoint, which is the Madir, the one who effected the Neder. So he's the one subject to the Isser, even though the one who is actually violating the Neder is the Mudar. Anyway, not to get involved in that right now, but the general debate in terms of who exactly is going to be who's going to be committing the avera, so to say, who's going to be culpable. Regardless, anyway, but generally speaking, though, in this construct of madir mudar, where somebody makes a na, and therefore somebody else is not allowed to get benefit from him. So the general understanding is that we've been discussing an entire parak. This is the fourth parak of the Masechta. What qualifies as hana? Meaning, if the overarching theme of the entire parak can be subscribed and summarized in one sentence, it's basically what qualifies as hana. That's what we've been discussing and describing, and we're going to continue to do so, although in this Mishnah over here, what we're going to be doing is the following. Understanding that the Mudar now is not allowed to get benefit from the Madir, so that means to say that anything that qualifies as a benefit, the Mudar is not allowed to get hana from. But right now, that's one directional, meaning the Mudar is not allowed to get hana from the Madir. Can the Madir get any hana from the Mudar? Sure. Meaning as long as it's a one-directional neder, so that means to say that the Isser hana is only going in one direction. And it's the Mudar who can't get benefit from the Madir. Good. Presumably, any hana going in any other direction, and any other direction, there's only one other direction. Any hana going in the other direction would, in fact, be permitted. That's what we would have suggested. In fact, that would have been a reasonable thought. What our Mishnah is coming here to introduce us to is the idea that, no, that when I have a Madir and a Mudar, there are certain activities that are going to be prohibited in both directions. In other words, the Mudar is not allowed to get benefit from the Madir, that's via the Neder, but still, the Madir also can't get certain benefits from the Mudar. And in our Mishnah, we're going to be discussing is what exactly are those benefits that the Madir can't get from the Mudar, and but just as important as why. Meaning, if it's a one-directional neder, and the Isser HaNa is only going in one direction, so why are there certain activities which are going to be bound by the neder and are going to be prohibited in both directions? So that's what we're going to be discussing over here in the course of this Mishnah, the short upcoming sugya. Let's get underway. Hamudar HaNa Mechaver Lo Yishol Anem V'Lo Yishol Mimenu Lo Yivane V'Lo Yovem Mimenu V'Lo Yimkor Lo V'Lo Yikach Mimenu. Okay, so there are three transactions that cannot be done in either direction, from the Madir to the Mudar and vice versa. So number one, you can't borrow. Number two, you can't borrow. And number three is that you can't buy and sell. Okay. Or you can't make a purchase. Okay, so probably if you were listening carefully, so you heard me say the word borrow. In fact, you heard me say the word borrow twice. That's because in English, we don't have words to differentiate between the borrowing of money and the borrowing of an object. But in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, so there are clearly words differentiating between the two. When we're talking about the borrowing of money, so that's a milva. When we're talking about the borrowing of an item, that's called a she'ela. Good. So what the Mishnah is telling us is that I can't borrow and I can't borrow. But the first borrowing is a she'ela, and that's the borrowing of an item. And the second borrowing of the Mishnah is the borrowing of money. So it cannot be done in either direction, nor can a sale be done in either direction. Good. So that's what the Mishnah tells us, and the Gemara immediately wants to understand this. So Bishlama, now in today's daf, right, a number of dafim over here in Nedarim, we have Girsa issues. Today's daf is not going to be any different. There are some Girsa issues to take into consideration, but I will try to keep everything as streamlined as possible, despite the fact that on a number of occasions in today's daf, the Ron prefers alternate Girsas, but I'm going to work with the Girsas that we have in our Gemara to the best of my ability. So Bishlama lo yovane de kamahanile ela lo yove menu my kamahanile. So the Gemara says, look, I certainly understand that if you're in need of money and you're now going to be on the receiving end of a loan, so that obviously serves as hana. In other words, you're going to be benefiting. But if you are now going to be on the giving end of the loan. So exactly what exactly is the hana? And what we're trying to understand is that the Mishnah is saying is that when it comes to a loan, it's going to be usher in both directions, even though the neder that was created only creates an isser hana in one direction. But when it comes to lending, borrowing money, it's going to be prohibited regardless of which direction we're going from, whether we're going from the madir to the mudar or we're going from the mudar to the madir. The Gemara says, I don't understand. I understand how the recipient of the money is going to be getting benefit, but the one who is the malva, the lender, how exactly is he going to be getting benefit? The Gemara says, I'm really struggling to understand that. Now, keep in mind, by the way, just to help us all understand, loans that we're describing right now are non-interest loans. So basically, when the malva is lending money, it's really an act of chesed, meaning he's really not getting anything out of it. There is no benefit that's coming in his direction. So it's exactly the Gemara's question. So I don't understand. If the neder is only one direction, so then there should only be an isser in lending in only one direction. Notably, the one who's not allowed to get benefit cannot be the one who's receiving the money. But if he wants to lend the money to the other, why not? So that's the Gemara's question. Uvishlama, and the Gemara says, now this is where the gears of our Gemara is a little bit tricky, but basically what the Gemara is saying is that, look, I can envision a scenario in which the lending of money is going to be a hana. I can even envision where the sale of an item is going to be a hana. Meaning that even in the case of lending and lending money and a sale, so it could work as a hana in either direction. Let's start with lending. So lending money, so again, these are non-interest loans. So what exactly would be the hana from the perspective of the malva? So it could very well be the following. That when you are lending money, obviously, milva lo tzad nitna, you lend money, you know that the whole purpose of a loan when it comes to money is so that the borrower is going to spend the money. You know that the borrower is not going to be paying you back the exact same coins that you lent them. That's the whole nature of a loan. So when it comes to a loan, so here's what we could suggest. There is going to be some benefit that will go in the direction of the malva, of the lender, and notably in a situation in which he's going to lend coins. The coins that he lent were a little bit rubbed out, a little bit faded, and the coins that he's going to be receiving are going to be a little bit better. Same value, same amount, but the coins are just going to be a little bit better. Now, again, you and I, it's a little bit hard to understand what does that mean, good coins, bad coins. In the Gemara, we hear about that all the time, a good coin versus a bad coin. But remember, back in the good old days, their currencies were not fiat currencies, a term I learned recently. So their currencies were not fiat currencies. Their currencies were actually value-based, meaning it was made up of a metal, and the metal had a certain weight, and it was also minted. So back in the good old days when they had coins and they used it as currency, so the shinier the coin, I know it's funny, but that's basically the point. The shinier the coin, the easier it is to pass the coin from one person to another. Meanwhile, if the coin is a little bit rubbed out, it's going to be a little bit harder. So the Gemara says, look, in the case of a malva, when the lender, so there is going to be some benefit that would go in his direction in that he's going to give coins that are a little bit inferior. He's going to get back coins which are a little bit better, a little bit superior. He's not getting extra value. In other words, it's the same amount, but the coins are a little bit better, and they're just going to be easier to pass in the market. Good. So I understand that when it comes to a loan of money. And also when it comes to a sale, so I understand that sales can be beneficial in both directions. Now, this goes back to a point that we made earlier in this Masechta, and that when it comes to sales, so sometimes sales benefit the seller, sometimes sales benefit the buyer. Okay, and really, it depends on the on market forces. It depends on the demand. Anyway, we discussed it earlier. Basically, what the Gemara is saying is that, look, when it comes to lending money, when it comes to sales, so I can envision how it is that's going to be beneficial in either direction. Good. And when the Mishnah says that that neither transaction can be done in either way, from the Madir to the Mudir, from the Mudir to the Madir, so the Gemara says, so of the three cases of the Mishnah, two of them I can understand. The lending of money, I get it. The sale of an item, I get it. Because I understand how benefit can go in either direction. But the Gemara says, but here's the part where we're struggling with, But let's say I go over and I say, can I borrow your rake? Good. Can I borrow your rake? Now over here, when it comes to the lending of an item, so presumably over here, hana will only be going in one direction. Where does hana, when it comes to the lending of an item, ever qualify as a bi-directional event? It's not going to happen. So over here, what I don't understand is that if we're talking about a neder, which is simply one-directional, and the mudar can't get hana from the madir, so then fine. So I understand that the mudar can't borrow an item from the madir, but why not go the other direction? Why can't the mudar lend an item to the madir, which is what the Mishnah says you can't do? Okay, so that's problematic. That, the Gemara says, I'm a little bit stuck on that point. That needs explanation. The Gemara says, I'll give you one of two ways to explain it. So, Am Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chinin Kagon, Shana Johanna Zemizah. So, solution number one of the Gemara, which is a really easy solution, and that is that it was a bidirectional neder. Meaning that what happened is that you had two people, Reuven and Shimon. So Reuven says, you're not getting hana from me. And Shimon says, good, right back at you. You're not going to get hana from me. So now that the hana is going to be made in both directions, so now you understand, so you can't borrow, you can't lend. Okay. It is a simple solution. On the other hand, it just basically took all the teeth out of the Mishnah. Meaning now what the Mishnah is teaching us is that in a situation when you have a bi-directional neder, where each party made a neder against the other, you're not going to get benefit from me. The other said the same. So then you can't lend one to the other. Meaning at that point in time, the Mishnah is making a point that's all too obvious. Okay, Gemara doesn't address it, but in other words, it certainly requires more thought in terms of, with this answer, we no longer really have a chiddush in the Mishnah. Okay, next. Abaya Amar, gzera lishol mishum lahashol v'chem b'kulu gzera. So Abaya says, what we can do is give a simpler answer. Meaning, we could say that our Mishnah is talking about a case where there was one neder, madir, mudar. Only one person made a neder against the other person. So why can't these things be done? Why can't these transactions occur? In other words, from the mudar to the madir, meaning where it won't be a violation of the neder, because the one who is getting benefit is not bound by the neder. So why can't we do that? So Abai's answer is very simple. Because with these transactions, what we're worried about is that there will be reciprocity. In other words, if I go ahead and lend you money, and even though you're allowed to get benefit from me, I can't get benefit from you. So if I lend you money, so what's going to happen is that in a future time, you're going to feel indebted to me because I lent you the money, you paid me back. And now what you're going to do is that you're going to lend me money and thereby violating the neder. And in all the cases of the Mishnah, when you have these kinds of transactions, loans of money, loans of objects, sales, so what's going to end up happening is that there will be a point of reciprocity, and Abai says and that the Chachamim were concerned about that. So as a gzeira, so therefore none of these transactions can occur, even in the direction where it would be permitted, but for concern that once we go down that road, it's going to then go in its reciprocal, and thereby violating the neder, so therefore don't go down that road. That's Abai's understanding. It's a gzeira. It's a rabbinic decree. Good. We are now at the Mishnah Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. We are going to continue. This Mishnah is long. It's going to cover basically the Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah over here, starting off with a similar discussion of what can be done and what cannot be done from the Madir to the Mudar. But then what the Mishnah is really going to be focusing on and what we're going to be spending the rest of today focusing on is circumvention of a neder. Meaning once a neder is created, is there a way to circumvent it? And the answer is going to be yes, which is going to be most of today's daf. So today's daf Mem Gimel, tomorrow's daf as well, but today's daf is Mem Gimel, and we're going to be talking about, is there a way of circumnavigating a neder? And again, effectively, the answer is going to be yes, but that's a simplified answer. As we go through today's daf, we're going to see that the answer is going to be more complicated. The Mishnah starts off. The Amar Lo Yishilan Parascha. So let's say I go to a person, I say, can I borrow your cow? In other words, so I need some plowing to be done. And what I need is a little bit of horsepower. Or in this case, sorry for the bad pun, but a little bit of cow power. So what I do is I go over and I say, can I borrow your cow? So Amar Lo, Eini Panuya. So he says, I'm not available. In other words, sorry, can't give it to you right now. It's really busy. Now the person who made the request is looking at the cow and the cow is not really busy. And obviously now we are in the area of human relationship, or really the failure of human relationship. And obviously now we're in the beginning of a fight between the two. And Amar Konim Sadin, Shani Chorish Bala Olam. And the person who just got rejected, so he's good and angry. And he says, Konim Sadi. My field now is going to be bound by a neder. Where? Ani Choresh Bala Olam. It's never going to be plowed. Now, it's a little bit hard to decipher exactly what the neder was, but basically what he's saying is that you reject me, your cow is never plowing my field, and I'm saying that through a neder, that your cow is not going to plow my field. Okay. So the Imaya Darko Lech Lachra, so the Mishnah itself now says, what exactly is going to be the parameters of the neder? So over here, in terms of giving good definition to what the parameters of the neder is going to be informed by what's the standard practice of the person who made the neder. Imaya Darko Lachrosh. So who else of Rechul Adam Mutarim? So if the person who owned the field is typically the one who does the plowing of the field, so then here's what we're going to say. What we're going to say is that that what he meant by the neder is that I'm not going to use your cow. In other words, my usage of your cow is going to be prohibited. Okay, I'm going to admit it's a little bit difficult to understand in that usually in a dharma we're going on items and not on actions. And what the Mishnah clearly is understanding over here is that if it was his general practice to go and plow the field, so the neder is going on the action of the plowing. Okay. And I admit that that's a little bit tricky to understand because typically that's not how we understand Nedarim. We understand Nedarim more based on the item than on the action. Right? We said that in the beginning of the Masechta. We're saying it now as we are a month and a half into the Masechta. Okay, so it is a little bit tricky to understand. Still, notwithstanding, so that is how we're going to understand the neder. Which means now that the neder, since it's only prohibiting his usage of the animal, so that means that there's no neder on the actual animal itself. Somebody else wants to take the animal and use it for plowing, that's fine. That's exactly what the Mishnah says. Hu asur v'chol adam mutarim. However, im ein darko lachero, shu v'chol adam asurim. But if it's not his typical practice to go and plow the field himself, and so therefore when he said that that cow is not going to be plowing my field, so the neder now is going on the cow, and that means to say that it doesn't matter who uses the cow in terms of plowing the field, nobody's allowed to use the cow in order to plow the field. Good. So the Mishnah over here just tells us that part of understanding the definition of a neder is going to be a predicate of exactly what his standard practice is. Good. That's part one of the Mishnah, and now we move on to part two. Part two of the Mishnah, even though the Mishnah itself is not broken up, but these two Mishnahs, even though they really are discussing two different topics, are melded together, probably because the Gemara has no comment on the first part, but either way, regardless. The part two of the Mishnah now is going to be talking about, is there a possibility to circumnavigate a neder? Mishnah starts off, Amudar Name Chavero. So let's say you are now bound by a neder. You can't get benefit from somebody else. So, and ve'enlo mayochal. And currently right now, you're a little bit of a bind. You currently have nothing to eat. So, what could be done? Meaning right now, for him to go to the madir and get food from him, and obviously the Mishnah is talking about a case where that is clearly an option. The madir has what to provide for the mudar, but there's a neder where the mudar is now bound by a neder not to be able to get benefit from the madir. And so now, what can be done? So the Mishnah says, here we go, approach number one. So holech etzel chanvani. So the Mishnah goes on to describe where the Madir now is going to go to the storekeeper. Look, he goes to the storekeeper and basically he unloads to the storekeeper. Look, here's the problem, right? That person over there can't get benefit from me. And right now he has nothing to eat. And what am I supposed to do? And if I may add just the two short words of hint, hint. In other words, he's not just confiding and looking for the market owner as his personal therapist. But basically what he's telling the market owner is that, look, we need a solution over here. Like, can you understand what I'm asking you to do? So the who knows in law, uval venotim izem. Now what the owner of the market could do is that the next time the mudar walks into a store, the owner of the market say, look, take some food, right? It's on me, right? Don't worry about it. Good. And so now the mudar will take and he'll be able to eat. And now what the store owner could do is go back to the Madir and have the Madir pay the tab. So in other words, basically what we're doing is that we're using a third party in order that the neder will not be violated. And what the Mishnah is telling us is that's perfectly legitimate. Meaning indirect benefit from the Madir to the Mudar would be acceptable. And what we're going to be doing for the rest of this Mishnah, and really for the rest of today's daf, is the following, is that once we've already determined now that indirect benefit is going to be fine and acceptable, so what exactly is going to be qualifying as indirect benefit? So over here, using a third party is clearly going to be the best way in providing this indirect benefit because there's another person involved. The Mishnah says, we're going to do this other ways as well. Hayah Beisa Livnos, Gidro Ligdor, Osa Deo Liktor. So let's say that there's a service that's needed. His house fell down. His fence fell down. His field needs harvesting. So holech etzapoalim v'amr yishponi mudar mimeni hanavi niyudeh ma'aseh v'inosin amova v'not limischar zeh. So now what you do is you go to the madir that is that we're describing. The madir is going to go to a contractor and he'll say to the contractor, look, get a team, put his house back together, put his fence back up. And you'll come to me for payment. And once again, because now there is a middleman and you are not giving him benefit directly, you're not building the house, you're not building the fence, you're not harvesting the field, and somebody else is doing it, a contractor is doing it, and you're paying the contractor, perfect, that's fine. Good. So over here, in these cases, so what we have is the usage of a middleman. The usage of the middleman is going to create the permissible buffer that will allow for Hana to be conveyed from the Madir to the Mudar, won't be a violation there because circumvented because it was done via third party. The Mishnah goes on and says, well, what if there is no third party? Is there another way to do it without a third party? So the Gemara says, well, let's say there is a third party, but you're walking down and what's happening right now is that you the Madir, him the Mudar, and there's another person walking with us as well. We're traveling, and right now the Mudar has nothing to eat. Happens to be that right now I got food. So what can I do? So the Mishnah says, here's what you'll do. You'll give a matana, the food, as a gift over to the third party, and the third party will give it to the Mudar. Now over here, it's a little bit less of a buffer than what we described previously. Meaning in the previous cases in the Mishnah, so really, the Hana was conveyed from the storekeeper and from the contractor. And what you did is you just simply paid the tab. Over here, it's basically, you have the food, you're going to give it to a third party as a gift. Third party now is going to give it to the Mudar. Okay, it's obviously less of a buffer, but still, the point of the Mishnah is, it serves. It serves as a buffer and it will be considered as indirect benefit and therefore will be okay. Now, let's consider the same exact case, but let's take out the third party. Right now, the people that are walking down this long road is just the Madir and the Mudar. Mudar's in need. Madir's got food. Right now, as they're walking, the Mudar is getting good and hungry. And now the Madir is able to give him food, but they're bound by neder that he can't go ahead and give him food. Excuse me. What do you do? So the Mishnah says that under these circumstances, so meniach ala sela o la gader, ve'omer harehin muvkarin lechom ishiach boats, ve'hala nota ve'ochel, and Rabbi Yossi Oser. So the Mishnah says that under these circumstances, here's what you're going to do. So what you'll do is you'll put it on a fence, you'll declare to be hefker, then the Mudar will go ahead and take it off the fence, and that will be okay. Now, obviously over here, we are clearly in the biggest chiddush of the Mishnah. Meaning, at this point in time, there's no middleman, there's no third party. I didn't use anybody else to serve as a buffer between him and I, but that wasn't an option. Meaning, if that was an option, clearly that would have been the best approach. But that wasn't an option, so therefore, what you'll do is you'll declare it hefker. Now, disavowing yourself from the food, and now that the item is ownerless, he's going to be picking it up from hefker. Okay. So it will basically serve as a form of an escrow account, even though, of course, it's not exactly, it didn't go into anyone else's possession. And then the Mishnah concludes with Rabbi Yossi Oser. So, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, no. In other words, this won't be a means, this won't be an acceptable buffer to create a circuitous route from the Madur to the Mudar. Rabbi Yossi says that this is not viewed as indirect. The only way to view this is as direct, and therefore, it'd be a violation of the Neder. It goes without saying, I'm just going to add, if we're talking about Sakanas Nefashos, if we're talking about where the person is going to starve to death, or alternatively violate the Neder, so presumably, meaning it would seem to be a Dover Pashut, that at that point in time, you violate the Neder and you don't starve to death. Okay, in other words, it seems like the Mishnah is talking over here about inconveniences, meaning that it's right now, nobody's looking to lose their lives, it's just simply right now a convenience that would be generated if we could just simply get the food from the Madir to the Mudar. Okay, I think that's an obvious point. I hope I'm right about that. Anyway, we're starting off with the Gemara. So I'm Rav Yochanan, my time to Rav Yossi. So what we need to understand is that last viewpoint of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi rejects the putting the food on the fence, declaring it hefker, and having the other person take it. So what's the thought process behind Rav Yossi? Rav Yossi says, no, that's not indirect. So again, when we think about it, we understand that it certainly is a bigger chiddush than all the previous cases in the Mishnah. In the previous cases of the Mishnah, we had an actual middleman. Over here, we're not using a middleman, so I understand it's a bigger chiddush. But as much as it's a bigger chiddush, think about it. Let's consider. What happened is that you declare it to be hefker. It no longer is owned by anybody. Now that it's no longer owned by anybody, it's no longer owned by you. So when he takes it, he's not taking it from you. So in other words, as long as we're putting on our legal glasses and we're looking at it from a strictly halachic standpoint, so he's not taking it from you. He's taking it from Hefker. And now I understand that we've created this legal reality in that he's not taking it from you, but Hefker is real. Meaning once you put it down and once you declare it to be Hefker, it no longer is yours. So as much as it's a Chiddush, we understand it. And when Rav Yossi is saying, no, I reject that out of hand, so why would Rav Yossi reject that out of hand? See, it seems circuitous. Why does Rav Yossi not view it as circuitous? Good. So that's the question. So the Gemara answers. So my time into Rav Yossi kasavar hefker kematana ma matana ad asya mirshus anosim l'rishus amakabal av hefker ad asya l'rishus azoche. So what the Gemara now tries on is a really interesting svara. Fascinating. Just on the front end, I'll tell you that the Gemara is going to end up rejecting it. But just to entertain the following idea. What Rav Yochanan says that, you know, the thought process of Rav Yossi, I'm going to share with you how Rav Yossi views Hefker. Rav Yossi will view Hefker the same way as we view a Matana. What is a Matana? A Matana is a gift, but really what it breaks down to is, it's a transfer. I'm taking an item that belongs to me, and I'm giving it to you. And that means to say that, when exactly do I lose ownership of the item? When you gain ownership of the item. Meaning that there will never be an intermediary process, an intermediary step, where it's a gift, where it's mine, it's not mine, then it becomes yours. No. The way that gifts work, it's a simple way to view transfer, and that is that it's mine, and when is it no longer mine? When it's yours. Good. So that is how we view Matana, and for that matter, what Rav Yochanan is suggesting is that Rav Yossi views Hefker the same way. That when I put it down and declare it to be ownerless, it's not that I no longer am the owner. What I'm allowing somebody else to do is to come and pick it up. And when do I lose ownership of the item? I lose ownership of the item when and only when someone else comes along and picks it up. It is a fascinating way to look at Hefker. And what Rav Yochanan is advancing and advocating is that's the way Rav Yossi will be viewing Hefker. Now, if that's true, now we understand. Meaning that once Rav Yossi has this novel way of looking at Hefker, so then of course, this is not a circumvention. Meaning what we're looking is to create, is to somehow turn a direct benefit into an indirect benefit. Rav Yossi is going to reject the Hefker avenue because Hefker, at least the way we're presenting it right now, is not going to be indirect. Hefker is going to be direct. I put the item down. I declare it to be Hefker. It doesn't mean I lose ownership of it. All it means now is that somebody else can and has the right to go ahead and take it. And it's only at that point in time where now there's a transfership of ownership. I lose being the owner. He gains being the owner. And now that's going to be direct. That's why Rav Yossi will tell us that the declaring the item to be hefker is not going to work because it's no longer indirect. Good. So Meisav Rav Abba, so the Gemara says that's amazing. Meaning the Gemara is really going to struggle with even suggesting that that's the way hefker works. The way hefker works is that I don't lose my ownership, but rather I'm just simply allowing somebody else to take it. The Gemara says that's such a wild idea. And the Gemara says, I really don't think it's a tenable position. So, Meisav Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba asked a question based on the following Braisa. Ahala notel v'ochel v'rav yosi oser. Okay, good. So in the Braisa over here, we're going over the case of the fence. And in the case of the fence, so basically what we're doing over here, same thing what we saw in the Mishnah, but over here in the Braisa, we have one additional point. And that is Amr Rav Yossi Amasai Bisman Shenidro Kodem Lefkeira. That's only when the Nedra preceded the Hefkeiros. Aval Ima Ya Hefkeira Kodem Lenedra Harizemutter. So, but if we're going to go in the other direction, where the Hefker was before Nedra, so then Mutter Harizemutter. So then that would be Mutter. In the case of the Raisa, so we're talking about that the distinction to be made whether or not the neder is made before hefkeros, before the hefker was made before the neder. And according to Rav Yossi, that means as follows, that if you're a mafker before your neder, so then harizimutter would be mutter. That means to say as follows, is that you declared it to be hefker, and then afterwards the neder was communicated, and neder was created. So under those circumstances, Rav Yossi would say, I agree in that case over there, that he can go ahead and he could take it. Now the Gemara says, "Yamard ad asil rishos azochem ali nidro kodem lefker ali lefker kodem lenidro." And now the Gemara wants to know. Wait one second. We just had such a novel understanding of Rav Yossi, but within our novel understanding of Rav Yossi, so here's what comes out. It's really strange. Meaning that when you're mafkir something, you're no longer. Again, the simple way to understand hefkeres is you're no longer the owner. So, but now we're suggesting, according to Rav Yossi, when you're mafkir something, you still are the owner. And you will continue to be the owner until somebody else takes it. If that's true, so then what difference does it make whether you were mafkir and then the neder was made, or whether the neder was made and then you were mafkir? Meaning, if your mafkir, if your hefkeris does not relinquish your ownership, so you remain the owner even after you were mafkirit. And if a neder was created and communicated after you were mafkirit, it should apply to the item that's in Hefker, right? Good. So our novel understanding of Rav Yossi does not seem to be the correct understanding. So most of love umashani lo. So the Gemara says, yeah, you know what? Rabbi Abba asked the question. In other words, the Braisa seems to be difficult, but then Rabbi Abba says, upon further consideration, I don't think it's that difficult. And that is kolanodrein dato amashe Hefker. Because remember, what is a neder? Neder is going to be based on understanding. Meaning, just in today's daf alone, meaning aside from all the other dapim that we've done in Masechta Nedarim, just in today's daf alone, clearly, neder is going to be a function of what you considered and what's within your purview of consideration. Right? Intent becomes extraordinarily important when you're making a neder. And so over here, well, here's what we could say. We can maintain and we can continue thinking that when you're mafkir something, you don't lose ownership of the item. But if you're mafkir something, basically what you're doing is you're setting aside, allowing somebody else to take it. So if you're mafkir something and then you make a neder, your neder will not include, it will not incorporate something you were mafkir. Not because you don't own it, you do own it. It just happens to be that when you're making a neder, so there's certain things that it covers and certain things it doesn't cover. And in terms of its coverage, it won't cover something you were mafkir. You still own it? Yeah, I know I still own it. But remember, I declared it to be Hefker, which means I'm basically ready for somebody else to take it. Therefore, it won't be included, it won't be incorporated in my neder. Good. So we could say that. So we could still maintain our novel understanding of Rav Yossi and still learn the Braisa. So Meisav Rava, so the Gemara says, okay, so here we go, a second attack against this novel understanding of Rav Yossi. And that is the following. Now over here, we're talking about a Shechiv Meira. So somebody is a Shechiv Meira. So anything he says is going to be is going to be transferred, meaning that a person who's dying. So the understanding is that what he's doing now, obviously, is he's getting his assets in order, and so therefore you don't need kinyanim. You just simply need declarations, and that's sufficient. That will be enough. But also with the shechiv meira, there's an understanding that everything's al tanai, meaning that if he's giving away everything that he owns, and somehow he makes a miraculous recovery, so then there is no transfer, everything's going to go back to him. So by every Shechemira, there's an assumed Tanai. Good. So the Gemara goes over the following Braisa regarding a Shechemira. And that is Miksasim L'Rishon, and then V'Kulon L'Sheni. So here he makes a confusing declaration. Part of his assets he wants to give to so-and-so. And then, immediately afterwards, he says, and all my assets I'm going to give, and he designates a secondary beneficiary. Okay. It's very confusing. Meaning, what just happened with that second declaration, where he's going to give everything over to somebody else? So, what happened was he made a miraculous recovery. Okay, so now, what just happened? Meaning, so, partial gifting of some of his assets to number one, and then a full gifting of all of his assets to number two. Okay, now what happens after the full recovery? So, Rishon Kana, Sheni Lo Kana. Okay, so what happens is the following. Is that the first person now, who was gifted part of his assets, actually is still going to be qualified to receive it. The second person who was gifted all of his assets is going to receive nothing. Oh, okay. So here's what we're going to have to piece this back together again. It's a little bit of a mystery, but we can solve for the mystery. Meaning, here's what we're going to assume just happened. What just happened is that when he gifted to the first person, so he was doing so, and again, he wasn't ready to give all of it to the first person, but nevertheless, he gave him a part of it. Fine. When he then went ahead and declared everything to be to the second person, so what he basically did is that he retracted and recanted on his first. And he was basically saying that, look, change my mind, right? That second recipient, I like him, I trust him, everything's going to go to him. Ah, but because now he declared everything to go to him, even the part that was meant to go to the first person, so now when he recovers, so that recovery now is going to undo the gift, because remember, every gift of a Shechemira has a built-in Tanai, that if he makes a miraculous recovery, it's going to go back to him. And so therefore, everything's going to go back to him, and so therefore, all we're left with is his first instruction. His first instruction now is to give part to one person. And that's not built on a Tanai, because that wasn't everything. Okay. I know all that was a little bit confusing, but what comes out is the following. Meaning, Rava was interested in just one particular point from that Braisa. And that is that within that Braisa, so what did he gift over?
Question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
The first gift that he gave, wasn't a conditional gift, so how could he retract it?
Exactly. No. Oh, in other words, it wasn't a conditional gift. So in other words, when he said that kulan l'sheni, that everything's going to go to the second person. So
that he already had distributed the first person. So when he said kulan, that could not include the gift that he gave to the first person.
Right. So I guess what you're going to have to say is that there was no distribution as of yet. It was just a commitment that was made, but the commitment made, again, in the state of being a Shechemira, so then commitments can be undone. You'll have to say something along those lines. But you're right, though. In other words, once there's a distribution, so presumably at that point in time, he can't take it back. That part, I'm going to agree. Regardless, the Gemara was now looking just to make one singular point. And again, and that is that something that was already... that was already set aside for somebody else. So what you can do is that you can go ahead, take it back, and gift it to the second person. So basically what we're suggesting now is the following. Meaning, let's see how we're going to be viewing something that goes to Hefker. Again, Rav Yochanan, in his presentation of Rav Yossi, says that when something goes to Hefker, so here's what's happening. What's happening is that I don't lose ownership of it. The item is still under my ownership. But when I make a neder, it no longer is subsumed under the neder. Because once I commit it to somebody, I no longer will be taking it back and incorporating it in my neder. And what did we just see together in the Braisa? What we just saw is that even though he took some of his assets and he gave it to number one, what he then did is he basically said, you know what? All of it to number two, including that which I set aside for number one. So what we just saw together is that what he's ready to do is that even though he earmarked it to somebody else with his second declaration, he went ahead and he took it back. And that belies, that goes against what we just suggested. That when you're mafkir something, so you, it no longer is within your purview. You no longer would consider incorporating that in your neder. So El Amarava, so the Gemara says, okay. So with all that stated, so basically that was approach number one. So the Gemara says, let's abandon approach number one. Let's go with another approach. So again, let's set ourselves up. Rav Yossi in the Mishnah says that you cannot use the fence maneuver. The fence maneuver is unacceptable. Again, what is the fence maneuver? I'm a madir, he's a mudar, he's hungry, I have food. So according to the Tanakhama, put the item on the fence, declare it to be hefker, he'll take it off the fence. And that's indirect, and that's fine. That's the Tanakhama. And Rav Yossi says it's not acceptable. What we've been doing now for a good part of today's daf is entertaining. Maybe Rav Yossi is predicated on the fact that we have to look at hefker in a new light, according to Rav Yossi, and that is hefker does not relinquish ownership. Hefker just simply means I'm allowing somebody else to take it, but it's like a gift. When do I lose ownership of it? Only when he takes it. And that means to say it no longer is indirect, it's direct. Novel, interesting. The Gemara says, yeah, but it doesn't seem to be correct. So the Gemara says, El Amarava, Hainu Taima, the Rabbi Yossi, Gzera Mishum, Matana Beis Chora. So the Gemara says, I'll give you a simpler explanation of Rabbi Yossi, and simply because it's a Gzera. The story with Beis Charan we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta. So what we'll do is we'll wait. The waiting is not going to be that bad. It'll be Daf Memches, right? A little bit later this week. When are we doing Memches? It doesn't matter. Anyway, it's coming up. Today's Daf is Mem Gimel. So we'll go through the story of Beis Charan. But basically, if I could say it simply and succinctly, it basically is the following. In other words, if you were really intent on declaring it to be Hefker, where anybody can go ahead and take it, so then it works. But the obvious concern over here is that, look, let's look at the circumstances. Just look at the context. Over here, he's hungry. I have food. Okay, let's use this legal loophole. I'm going to put it on the fence. I'm going to declare it to be Hefker. Come on. In other words, I'm not really declaring it to be Hefker. What I'm really doing is basically saying, I want him to take it, and I can't give it to him directly. I'll put it on the fence, but I'm putting on the fence so that he could take it. And so even if you are in your heart of hearts really and truly interested in giving it to him, and let's even say that you want to do it so in the correct manner, where you're really going to make it hefker. But okay, good. You're not everybody. Meaning that somebody else was going to try the same maneuver is not really going to be mafkirit. And so therefore Rav Yossi says, because of the gzer, because I'm concerned that not everyone's going to fully be mafkirit, really allowing anybody to go ahead and to take it. So under those circumstances, Rav Yossi's concern is that a rabbinic decree is put into place so that nobody will be doing it in this manner because not everyone's going to be doing it in the correct legal manner. Good. That's a simple explanation of Rav Yossi, and Rava believes that in fact is a correct explanation. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Tanya, we're going to pick it up right in the bottom of the short dapim. Okay, let's quickly review our daf today. Point number one in today's daf with the Mishnah that started on the bottom of Membeis and Membeis, and that if I have a madir and I have a mudar, the mudar cannot get hana from the madir, but still certain benefits cannot be conveyed from the mudar to the madir. Okay, so that would be lending and transactions. So even though presumably there is no problem with it, but still the Mishnah says problematic. Why? So in the Gemara we give two explanations. One, because the Mishnah is talking about a case where the neder was bilateral. The Madir made a neder against the Mudar, and then the Mudar reciprocated. Yeah, I'm not going to get benefit from you. How about this? You're not going to get benefit from me. And that's what the Mishnah is talking about. But then, as I pointed out, if that's what the Mishnah is talking about, then we don't really have a Chiddush, but that's possibility number one. And possibility number two is the concern of reciprocity. Meaning, if I lend to you, and even though you're right, I'm the Mudar, you're the Madir, if I lend to you, so what the concern is going to be that will come in the reciprocal as well. So because of the possible the probable reciprocity that will occur at a later point in time, so therefore it's going to be prohibited. And then we went through the next Mishnah, Mem Gimel Min Aleph, and the next Mishnah talked about a case in which a person made a neder against the animal plowing his field. The question of whether or not the neder was on the action or the neder was on the cow, it really is going to be a predicate of whether he normally plows himself or he doesn't. Good. And the second half of the Mishnah, which is really where we spent most of our daf today discussing, is that as long as the benefit is indirect, as long as there is a third-party intermediary, so then it won't be a violation of the neder. The Mishnah started off with cases that are really simple and straightforward, and then I'm really using a third-party intermediary, where I'm using the store owner, I'm using a contractor, he's the one providing the benefit, I'm going to go ahead and reimburse. That's not direct benefit, that would be fine. But then the Mishnah went on to describe cases that are not as obvious, all the way to the point where the last case in the Mishnah was controversial. The Mishnah talked about a case where I'm going to gift my food to somebody else, he'll then give it to you. Okay. At least we're using a third-party intermediary. And then the Mishnah says, now if that's not available, so then what? So then I'll put it on the fence, declare it to be Hefker, and now I'll take it off the fence. Is that in fact going to work? Is that going to be good? The Mishnah said yes, but then Rav Yossi said no. And what we spent the rest of today's daf discussing is, what's the thought process behind Rav Yossi? The first approach of the Gemara, Rav Yochanan's approach, is that Rav Yossi is taking us through a novel way of understanding how Hefker works. Hefker is not where I lose ownership, somebody takes it then from, let's call it escrow. In other words, that's not the way Hefker works, but the way Hefker works is that what I'm doing when I'm declaring it to be Hefker, I retain ownership, but I'm allowing somebody else to take it. And it's no different than a matana, and it no longer is indirect, but rather it's direct. So that's a novel way to understand Rav Yossi, but the Gemara says, look, as interesting as a novel as it is, it doesn't seem like it's supportable. We quoted a couple of brises. The first brisa we defended, but the second brisa really would indicate that it's just too novel an approach, and it doesn't seem to be correct. Rather, the simple understanding of Rav Yossi, gzera, meaning that if you declared it to be Hefker, so then yes, he's not taking it from you, he's taking it from Hefker. Hefker is an entity onto its own. It's really ownerless, and it really would be okay. But the concern is that not everyone understands the legalities, and somebody's going to declare it Hefker, but not really declaring it Hefker. So it's a gzera. We'll stop over here.